This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Domestic and family violence was declared a national crisis last year, and yet for many families, not much has changed. Now, a world-first Australian study is asking a confronting question. If impulsivity plays a role in violence, could treating it help prevent harm before it happens? Well, joining us is Lee Knight, Academic Program Director for the Mental Health Practice Program at the University of New South Wales. Lee, welcome to Drive.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
This study challenges some strong assumptions. Where do you usually see people's reactions go first when you talk about it?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It really depends which group we're talking to, but I think the thing that we remember at all times is that what we're actually trying to achieve is reducing and hopefully stopping domestic violence. It would be great if we could stop all forms of violence, but it really depends on which group you're talking to. But what we always remind people of is that our goal is the same, which is to stop domestic violence, which is a huge problem in Australia and internationally, as I'm sure you all know.
Lee, before this trial began, what were you seeing or not seeing in existing responses to domestic and family violence that made you want to try something different?
Yeah, again, another great question. So initially when we started the study, and I think starting a randomised control trial, I don't think you realise how long it takes when you're involved in it as it actually does. So when we first started the trial, our focus was what we refer to as general violence. So we were looking at reducing impulsivity in people who committed acts of violence, looking at trying to address the serotonergic dysfunction, so that if you can improve the serotonergic dysfunction and you can reduce impulsivity, then hopefully you could reduce that reactive violence. But as the trial progressed and we looked at our data, we found that about 80% of our population who were screened and referred for general violence, that was the criteria, about 80% of those had domestic violence offences. And we looked at the literature, what was out there about what works. And I'm really disheartened to report is that, I'm not saying that there's not things out there that do work, but there's just no evidence that they do, or there's very little evidence that other approaches work. So that's what really spurred us on, was we want something meaningful, impactful, and evidence-based in there that can be part of the solution to solving the domestic violence problem.
Just based on that, how would you describe the role that impulse control plays in terms of domestic violence?
Yeah, I think that's still something that we need to explore further. But what we do know is that reactive violence, so that violence that is almost acting without thinking, we definitely saw that that played a role in the violence that we saw in the trial. So that short fuse, acting without thinking. I think one of our participants' partners spoke about the before the participant went on the medication, there was this kind of like fearful quiet in the house. And then after they'd been on the medication, there was this calm quiet in the house. And what they meant by that was they were waiting for the participant to react to something that, you know, caused them to feel, rightly or wrongly, then that it needed a strong reaction, and they were waiting for that rapid escalation. But on the medication, that was absent, and it was this calm quiet, and it was not waiting for something to happen and then an angry or violent response to then ensue.
Were you surprised by the how behaviour changed over time with the medication?
I don't know that we ever thought about it, to be honest, as we were running the trial. So we took a very much a health based approach, which was we wanted to ensure that the people that we saw were well taken care of. They're a group of people that are generally excluded from other services. They're not the kind of people who sit quietly in GP waiting rooms. They routinely don't attend or don't get asked to come back to other mental health services. So I don't think surprised was the thing. What I think we did realise quite quickly was the surprise of others. So we had a lot of our guys were from probation and parole, or community corrections, as it is in New South Wales. And we would get calls from their community officers saying, like, what have you done to him? He's like a different guy. He's come in, he's listened to what I've got to say, he's now participating in the programs that we've told him that he must complete. So I guess I was surprised with the reports that we got back. But when we were assessing these guys, we did spend a lot of time ensuring that they were medically and psychiatrically fit to go on the trial and that they didn't need more acute services involved. So we got to know them very well. And I think a lot of the time we found that they didn't want to be this violent, angry person. So I think that probably took away from the surprises. We got the impression that they didn't want to engage in these acts and that they didn't want to be that person, and they understood on some level that it was a the wrong response and they shouldn't be engaging in those behaviours, but almost like they felt they were unable to help themselves. So it was that want to not be like that that I think took away any surprise for the clinicians involved in the trial.
We're chatting with Lee Knight from the University of New South Wales about a world-first Australian trial looking at new ways to prevent domestic violence before it happens. Lee, it's a common antidepressant that you gave people in the trial, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So it was sertraline. So it was known as it's a phase 4 clinical trial, which is an off-label trial. So we know that sertraline has effect on depression, anxiety, PTSD. This was seeing if it could modulate that impulsivity. So it was an off-label trial. That's a very commonly prescribed antidepressant, yes.
And is it likely that the same effect would happen with other antidepressants as well, or is it just this particular one?
We think it would happen with other antidepressants. The main reason we chose sertraline was it was a well-researched medication. It had been around for many years. It was generally well-tolerated by patients who were taking it for depression, anxiety, and PTSD. And I think probably quite importantly, it was off patent, so it was relatively cheap for the medication. So we weren't looking for a new antidepressant that was very expensive to get through PBS or be prescribed. So they were the reasons why we chose sertraline.
Lee, how willing were the men to take the antidepressant?
Yeah, they were. So we did check compliance. We relied on self-report, and that was something that we had to do very early on. There are blood tests that you can do to see if someone has been compliant with sertraline, but they're relatively pricey and complicated. We found that there was mixed kind of reasons why people didn't want to engage in the trial. There were reasons that men gave us, such as being impulsive is useful. What if I was in a park and somebody attacked me? I'd want to be impulsive. Other ones didn't want to be on a medication. But generally, the men that we got to what we call the run-in phase, which is when they came and had that first psychiatric assessment that was about 3 hours. So we had impulsive men who were before the court systems or in probation and parole. We had them for at least 3 hours for the initial assessment. And we found that after that period, their willingness to take medication was good. And a lot of the guys were very, very keen to report that how they felt on the medication. In saying that, though, we did have a relatively large attrition rate, which is 3 people dropping off the trial. We understand that it's pretty similar to that the dropout rate that you see in other clinical trials that deal with populations that are difficult to engage in clinical trials. So there was a large attrition rate, but we were suitably investigating the results in order to get that statistically significant result that was in the Lancet article.
Now, Lee, if someone's listening and they're thinking maybe I should think about taking an antidepressant because there's a history of family violence there, does it work as a single intervention, or do you still need other treatments as well?
That's a very good question. So what we found was there was a 21% reduction in domestic violence offending on participants who were prescribed the antidepressant. But they were also engaged in the reinvest. Initially, reinvest started as a very simple clinical trial. We would give the person medication or placebo, and we would ask them some questions. we would follow them up for 12 months, 24 months, and that would be all the intervention we gave them. It became apparent very quickly that this was a population who had significant needs and we had to provide wraparound services. So what we do know is that the wraparound services were given to the placebo group and the active group. The active medication group, the patients on sertraline, they did better with the wraparound services and the medication than the placebo group who got the wraparound services. If you look at the guys that could have gone on the trial but for whatever reason did not, even those who were not on medication and received the wraparound services did significantly better than the group who that we compared them to. So we think that the combination of both is the gold standard. And also, we do know that generally in psychiatric treatment, the gold standard of treatment for something like depression would be medication and psychological intervention as well. So we think the combination of both is very important.
It's a significant reduction. Now, you touched on it before, you heard directly from partners and family members. What did their experiences tell you that the data alone couldn't?
Yeah, so that was, we ran several different, I guess, sub-studies whilst we were running the main study. So we did have some formal questions and qualitative data from partners. I don't think I've got it in front of me right now, but about 92% of those that we did qualitative data on said that the significant other, so it was family, so it could have been a partner, or it could have been a mother, or it could have been another female involved in their life. 96% of women overwhelmingly endorsed the guys on the trial. Just anecdotally, we did have some comments around that one woman said that she used to sleep with a hammer under a pillow because she was so fearful of her partner's behaviour. And since he'd been on the medication, he was talking about problems and she didn't feel that sense of unsafety. I guess we do need to qualify that with, we do need to ensure that victim services are available to women who are experiencing domestic violence. And we certainly are not saying that this is kind of like the silver bullet or something that will, you know, will make sure that victims of domestic violence are safe. But we think it's part of that broader package.
Lee, I think it's promising research, and I'm pleased that you shared it with us on Drive. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. That was Lee Knight, Academic Program Director for the Mental Health Practice Program at the University of New South Wales. If you or someone you know is experiencing family or domestic violence, 1-800-RESPECT, that's 1-800-737-732 is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you're in immediate danger, call 000. And for men who want support to change their behaviour, the Men's Referral Service is available on 1-300-766-491. And if you...
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.